Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, happy Friday, everybody. Hope you're going to get prepared for this great weekend that is coming up in sports. We've got the Masters. We've got the Rays hosting the San Francisco Giants. So should be a great weekend in sports. I'm going to get to a couple of mailbag questions that were left over that were very intriguing. We'll do that in just a second. A little bit of news, I guess, yesterday, the announcement that from his family, O.J. Simpson had died. Very controversial figure, obviously one of the greatest running backs of all time, both a Heisman Trophy winner at USC. What he did with the Buffalo Bills way back in the day was incredible. Not a great Bills team. That's when, you know, teams played, what, 14 games, I think. Phenomenal player. One of the first athletes that parlayed his stardom in athletics to commercial success with all the Hertz rental car ads and things like that. And then, of course, infamous for his role, whatever it may be, he was acquitted of these charges, but of course, accused of murdering Ron Goldman and his wife, Nicole Brown Simpson. So that was a trial, you know, almost of the century in 1995. I sat and watched that one just about from start to finish. So finally did like 9 years in prison, I think, in Las Vegas for another case where he tried to get some memorabilia back broke the law there. But you know, just a one of those headlines that come across the ticker and you kind of remember, you know, where you were during the Bronco situation, the chase in Los Angeles, all of that. So it was interesting, brought back a lot of memories and certainly not all good ones, but O.J. Simpson has passed away. That was the news, of course, on Thursday. All right. Speaking of football, and this is a rough segue, but we had a chance to talk to Bucks general manager Jason Light. You know what's amazing to me, and you talk about how time flies, right? And it does for everybody. It doesn't wait for anyone. But Jason Light now has presided over 10 NFL drafts for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's one of the longest tenured, if not the longest tenured GM in the NFL. And it'll be hard for him to ever top maybe his first pick ever for the Buccaneers, which of course was Mike Evans. And you know, that guy, of course, now 30 years old, 10 straight seasons to start his career with 1,000 yards, certainly putting together a Pro Football Hall of Fame resume. So not a bad place to begin your tenure as a GM. Look, there were some rough years. I would go back and say, take a look at the 2016 draft, I think comes to mind, and some others. But what wins in the NFL almost certainly is continuity. You want continuity in coaching if you can get it, certainly continuity at the quarterback position if you have a good one, and then continuity in the front office, the general manager. And not only just the general manager, but then you look at the guys, sort of the first lieutenants that have been around Jason Light, guys like John Spytek, the assistant general manager, Mike Greenberg, the other assistant general manager, Mike Beal, who has done college scouting almost from the time that Jason was here. So, you know, those guys have sort of streamlined and perfected kind of what they're looking for in terms of draft picks beyond the talent. You know, I think talent is one of those things that's easy to identify. You know, there are measurables, right? You have the stopwatches and you have the combine and, you know, this guy runs fast, he jumps high, and so on and so forth. And so that sort of thing is fairly readily available. You also have the tape, which you always want to go by, even superseding sort of what the measurables are in terms of their athletic ability. But there's something more than that, right, to be successful in the NFL. And what the Bucs have done, I think, over the years, have found a type of player that they look for in particular. And that's a player who you know, may not be the most vociferous guy, may not be somebody that leads, you know, by their words and that kind of thing. But guys that just love football, and you say, well, how do you make it to the NFL if you don't love football? Believe me, there's got a lot of guys play for different reasons, right? And the grind of an NFL season, how you become better in this league, you have to be self-motivated. And most guys that make it, you say, well, they couldn't have gotten here if they weren't. And that's true to a degree. A lot of guys play for different reasons. You know, some guys play for the money. Some play for fame. Some play to help their families. But, you know, the Bucs have done a nice job of finding guys who play because they love the game, and also players that like to achieve, you know, beyond just the football field. It's interesting now that Devin White is no longer here. He's a Philadelphia Eagle. But one of the things that attracted the Bucs to Devin White, beyond, say, his incredible athletic ability, I mean, here's a guy that's 240 pounds and could run the way he ran and as physical as he was and all of that. And he's very, very good, especially early in his career. But this is just a small example. So Devin White went to LSU and he could have played by maintaining a 2.0 average, but he had a 3.5. So what does that tell you? It tells you that beyond just his goal of playing football, when he attempted something like school, it was important for him to achieve, you know? And so you look for those guys that are motivated to achieve, you know, whether it's necessary, you know, for them to play in the NFL or not, everything they attempt are they guys that want to excel. And I think the Bucs have done a nice job of kind of identifying those guys where it matters, right? Like I said, it seems unbelievable that you could make it to this level without having all those intangibles. But believe me, there are certain traits that you look for. And I think the Bucs have sort of found that, you know. But again, you know, if you're Jason Light and you start out with Mike Evans, it's kind of tough to duplicate that. But he's managed to do it. Like I said, not every draft has been great. But he talked about the continuity that they have within scouting in the front office. And he's always quick, you know, to thank the guys that the scouts, particularly that are on the road all year, you know, they do sacrifice a lot of time from home. That's their job. They love it. But this to them, these next 2 weeks, the draft, which is coming up, is their Super Bowl. You know, this is sort of where they get the payoff is in the selection of these players. And, you know, what Jason said on Thursday was that, you know, they know each other so well, and he feels like he's done a better job himself of going after the right kind of guy and avoiding the temptation to just go after talent and not necessarily look at the whole person. And so identifying that with a character grade, and they put an awful lot of stock into that. And he says, you know, he'll sit back and he'll see players down the road get suspended, maybe in trouble, whatever. And he'll look up and say, yeah, you know what? We had a do not touch grade on that guy. And so that's what's important. And so from that standpoint, I think they figured out sort of who their Buccaneer guy or Buccaneer man looks like. And I think last year's draft is a good example of that. I mean, if you consider that the 2023 class produced a bunch of eventual starters, and starting with the first pick, Kalijah Kancey, you know, the outstanding defensive tackle from Pittsburgh, outside linebacker Yaya Diaby came out kind of slow. But then by the middle of the season, took over as a starter, and he was very, very effective, 7.5 sacks. Then you had Cody Mauch, who from the beginning, you know, was their starting guard, and I think that he developed trying to make a tough transition from tackle to guard. And they're still sort of transitioning a little bit to becoming a younger team. There were all those years with Tom Brady and going for the Super Bowl. But they counted on a lot of rookies last year to step in and make immediate contributions. And I think that this year will be no different. I believe that even though they're picking 26th overall, you know, they hope that they can identify some guys that can come in and help them right away. And he said, you know, there are some years. Now, last year, because there was such a shift from veteran players to younger players, they maybe depended on rookies a little bit more than they would, but he says they're going to depend on this class too. And every year, you know, you hope for some patience and, you'd love to have these guys be all pros. But they need players this year too, like they did a year ago, to contribute right away. And you kind of approach that the same way every year. You want your rookie class to upgrade your team. You want to count on those guys to give you important, important reps, important plays, especially higher up in the draft. And I also thought that it was interesting. You know, we just look at the Bucks, and you kind of look at their offseason. Of course, a lot of it was focused, most of it really, was focused on re-signing their own guys. And starting with Baker Mayfield and Mike Evans and Lavonte David, using the franchise tag on Antoine Winfield Jr., which Jason Light said they're still talking to him, confident that they'll get an extension done with him, and Tristan Wirfs, who's on the fifth-year option. But, you know, they need guys that can come in and contribute right away. And I think what they've done is cover themselves every position in free agency, whether it's defensive backs going outside their own roster, getting guys like Jordan Whitehead and others. And so you've got some veterans. You pretty much, if you had to line up tomorrow and play, that's the goal of free agency, right? Like, what kind of team do we have? If none of our draft picks are prepared to start right away, how do we look on paper? And they look pretty good. They've covered themselves. And I think that, you kind of, even their last signing, which was Randy Gregory, an outside, linebacker, pass rusher type, a lot of people might think that, well, they've covered themselves at the outside linebacker position. They got some good depth there. Now, all of a sudden, that maybe isn't as big a need. Well, what Jason Light said is don't assume a situation like that they're covered there. He made it clear that, they were just looking for depth. And however it turns out, he said, that even Gregory said he didn't have his mind set on being a starter, that he has to go out and earn it, and he knows that. And so he said, if a good outside pass rusher presents himself, the signing of Gregory would not slow them or stop them, from trying to get that player, because obviously the importance of that position. And, you're not going to overlook a high valued position, even though you may have addressed it in free agency. And that includes inside linebacker with Lavonte David. That includes things like wide receiver. I think the receiver position is really one that, the Bucs are going to have to address. And whether they address it with their first pick, which is 26th overall right now, or they do it sometime during the draft, it's a deep position in the draft. But if you look at the NFL, you realize that you have to have playmakers on offense, particularly, with Liam Cohen's offense. He's going to go predominantly with one tight end and three receivers instead of two tight ends and two receivers and a running back. And that being the case, you look at the Bucs receiving core and you go, okay, they re-signed Mike Evans, but he'll be 31 by the time the season starts. And he's got two seasons under contract here. And then Chris Godwin is in his final year of his contract. So who are the next Mike Evans and Chris Godwin? Well, you might want to have to draft those guys and start doing it right away. Because, as much as you like Trey Palmer or Devin Tompkins or somebody like that, those aren't guys that are going to catch 90 balls a year. I don't think. And so the receiver, it's a good receiver draft. And it's time, if you recall, when Mike Evans was drafted, he had a veteran that was Mike Evans' age, about 31 years old, that was able to mentor him for a couple of years, and that was Vincent Jackson. So now's the time to bring in some young guys that can play, really play, that have all the intangibles, and get them in the mix as a third receiver, let them learn how to be pros from Chris Godwin, from Mike Evans. I would think they would be remiss if they didn't address that position in this draft. Doesn't mean they're going to force it or kind of reach for that position, but it is the perfect time to do it while you still have some veterans under contract and guys that can, that can help you out. They have a lot of needs. And what Jason says is that, when you looked at how close they came to going to the NFC Championship game, they did re-sign a lot of guys. That makes them feel like they can get this done pretty soon, maybe in the next couple years or a year or so, and that they could be competing, for championships. And as always, Jason is a big guy when it comes to the trenches. He's always going to look for offensive linemen. They've been linked to a lot of centers in the various mock drafts. That could be good or bad, depending on what the Bucs think of these guys. We've talked about the defensive line. Good teams are built up front, and I think that Jason understands that as much as anybody, being an old offensive lineman himself. And they're looking for leaders. You know, that's the quality that kind of runs through this whole draft for him, is guys that can come in, and they can be all types of leaders, you know, shapes and sizes. They can be an alpha guy. They can be an out front guy. Just as long as they're passionate about the game, he said, and they're resilient and they can deal with adversity. Because in the NFL, unlike college, it's a very long season, longer than your college football season, and there is a ton of ups and downs when you're a rookie in this league. You know, you go through good days, bad days, the grind of the practice, learning to be a pro, all the free time you have to deal with, getting into your playbook. There's so much to grow up about in the National Football League because you're playing with grown men, and they all want to be successful, and you've got to learn how to deal with that. So I think Jason and John Spytek and Mike have done pretty admirable job, especially over the last few years, of not only building a team that, you know, several years ago Tom Brady wanted to play with because he knew he could win a Super Bowl with these guys, but also rebuilding it, you know, and reloading it while still maintaining their ability to make the playoffs. I mean, this is a team that has now won or been in four straight playoffs, and I think that's the longest streak in the NFC, but they've won three NFC South titles. They're not looking to drop off anytime soon. So all those things are, I think, you know, are kind of a good reflection on Jason Light, who, again, has he made mistakes? Yes. Are you going to bat 1,000 in the draft? Absolutely not. But I think that they've minimized sort of that, you know, risk reward type thing, because, you know, again, talent doesn't just decide it for them. They're looking for more than talent. They obviously want the best talent they can. And sometimes, you know, you got to get lucky. The draft will fall to you or it won't. Picking 26th is not very sexy or easy to predict exactly what's going to occur at that late, you know, round or that late in the round. But the one thing that that Jason said was, you know, they have the ability to trade up, trade down. And those trades and sort of the preparation for those trades are kind of done this week. You don't want to go into draft day on Thursday night in a couple weeks and say, you know, hey, what if this happens? What are we going to do now? Hey, this team just traded up. What, you know, what are we going to do? Or this player is still available. Should we move down? Should we move up? All those kind of discussions and decisions are made about this week, he said, which I thought was interesting. So they'll have a lot of discussions with other teams, a lot of hypotheticals, and they'll go through the various scenarios. They go through the mock drafts themselves. And he says on draft day, he just kind of likes to take a very long walk and kind of clear his head a little bit. But by that time, you have your strategy, and you have to hope that a good player falls to you. A year ago, they had about five players targeted for their spot, and they watched them all come off the board. And there was one guy left, and it just happened to be a guy they really liked in Kalijah Kansi, and they took him. So, you know, good on the Bucs. I think they found a really good player there. But that's sort of how you have to map out what's going to happen. And the quarterbacks in this draft are going to push some good players down. You know, there could be as many as four or five go in well before the Bucs pick. The Bucs will also look at quarterbacks. It's not that it's a high priority after re-signing Baker Mayfield. They still have Kyle Trask and John Wolford. But the quarterback position is so valuable that Jason said, if that player is graded higher than another position, that they absolutely would consider and look at those quarterbacks. So hard to gauge, you know, how great this class is. A lot of it depends on where those players go, what happens around them, what kind of team they have, all that stuff. But it, you know, for the Bucs not to be in the quarterback mix, so to speak, drafting in the top five or top 10, they can benefit from those guys going early because more good players will be pushed down.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, before we hit the weekend, we do have a couple of mailbag questions left over from the other day, so let's hit those.
We'll start with some Lightning questions here. And Ellis asked, do the Lightning exceed expectations by making a deep run in the playoffs, or should past success make it an expectation at this point?
Well, look, I think we're spoiled. If you're a follower of the Lightning and here in Tampa Bay, I think what they have done is unparalleled right now. So they've created their own expectations. And I think the expectation with them in the postseason is always that they're going to make a run to the Stanley Cup. And frankly, they have those themselves, you know, so we're not saying anything that they don't believe themselves. Having said all that, look, there's some really good players on this hockey team and a tremendous core, but there's also an awful lot of new faces over the last two or three years. And so you just wonder, how long can they keep this run going? Is there another Stanley Cup run in this team? And it's hard to know the answer to that until you get in the postseason and you see who stays healthy, how's Vasi playing. We know their best players are as good as any other team's best players, right? But there is a little bit of the divide between, you know, what we've seen in the past, because they've had to, you know, the salary cap does that to you. You have to make choices. And so is that third and fourth line what it's been in the years where they've won Stanley Cups? I don't know that it is, but then I don't know how the chips are going to fall. You know, who are they going to play? Who's going to be healthy when they play them? What's that other team going to be playing like? Like, there's so many variables, because I think the hockey playoffs, you know, are so long, and it's such a grueling marathon type run that, you know, it's a war of attrition. You know, it's like how many parts are left on the track where you can keep the car together and keep going. So I would never count them out, because there's the heartbeat of a champion on this team. There's pedigree. There's MVPs. There's Stamkos and Hedman and all those guys, and Kucherov, who's had as good a year as any player in hockey. So how do you say to those guys they can't do it, right? Because they believe they can, and they have. However, this is not the year that I ever expected that Stamkos, no contract last year, maybe for him, you know, a whole bunch of new pieces coming in. They would exceed my expectations if they make the Stanley Cup. Let's put it that way.
I think the Eastern Conference, while maybe it's not quite as deep as it's been in the past, the top teams are really good. Boston, the Rangers, Florida, Carolina. Yeah. Can add Toronto in there. But the Lightning are playing their best hockey of the year right now. And ever since they kind of hit the end of February, and then the trade deadline when they added Anthony Duclair and Matt Dumba. And they've gotten pretty healthy. Like, they don't have guys missing outside of Mikhail Sergachev.
Right.
Who maybe makes a return if they go deep enough in the playoffs. But
yeah,
outside of him, I mean, Tanner Janot missed two games. Cirelli missed one. Hayden Fleury's missed a couple. But they're pretty healthy right now, and they're playing their best hockey. So would it surprise me if they advance in the Stanley Cup playoffs? No. But they're going to go up against most likely Boston or New York or Florida in the first round. Do I expect them to be favored going into there? No. And if they got beat, would it surprise me? No. I think there's six teams in the East that can win it this year. And it's Boston, New York, Carolina, Florida, and then Toronto and Tampa Bay. I don't know.
Any of those
I'm not sold on the Islanders or Washington or Pittsburgh to make a run. I mean, they may win a series, but they're not going to get to the Stanley Cup final.
You think any of those six could win it, to be clear?
Could win the Eastern Conference, yes.
Wow. Wow.
I do.
Then that's absolute parity, and that means the Lightning could get to the finals.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, like I said, is the Lightning's roster as deep as Florida's or the Rangers? No. Have they played as good of defense as Carolina or Boston? No. But as you said, they have the heartbeat of a champion.
No doubt.
They know what it's like.
Yeah.
They don't get rattled.
Right.
right? I mean, you know, even a bad game, bad shift, bad period, whatever, you know, I mean, last year against Toronto, they weren't favored.
No.
They lost that series 4-2. There was 3 overtime games.
Right.
1 overtime. And overtime in hockey in the playoffs is a 50-50. Like, first goal in wins. Like, you know, whether it happens quickly or late in the period, one of those overtimes go the other way. That's a fit. You got to the end of regulation tie. One of those go the other way, you're going to game 7.
Yeah.
Same 2 years ago against Colorado in the Stanley Cup final. One of those overtimes against Colorado, you had two games, two went to overtime. One of those go the other way, you're at game 7.
And to that Colorado series, they lost Braden Point.
Mm-hmm.
And they struggled mightily trying to control, you know, get the puck across the neutral zone.
And Colorado was the better team in that series, but they didn't dominate the series.
No.
They dominated game 2. They dominated game 2 that was like 7-0. I mean, that one they dominated. Right. But beyond that.
But it's 1-0 Lightning in game 6.
Yeah. But like I said, one of those overtime games goes differently. And that's the way it is. You know, look, the Lightning, when they won the Cup in 2020, had tons of overtime games. And
they won almost all of them.
They won almost all of them. I mean, you know, and that's how, you know, when you think about overtime, it's you were tied after 60 minutes. Now it's first goal in. Like, it's not necessarily 50-50, but it's kind of a crapshoot. I mean, one bad bounce, one lucky, you know, hits off a skate, hits off a player and bounces in. You know, you never know what happens in an overtime.
Yep.
You know, the hockey playoffs can be so close. Mm-hmm. And do the Lightning right now, as it's constructed, they're getting secondary scoring. They have 2 lines that can score now with the addition of Duclair there. Now they have 2 full lines. Anthony Cirelli looks fantastic as a second line center.
Playing great, yeah.
With Hagel and Stamkos on his wings.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
And now, they have the big equalizer, the big cat.
Absolutely. I mean,
the big cat gives them a chance to make it every year because we know that in the playoffs, you know, a couple things. One, and I just think this, and this may hurt the Lightning because they have the best power play in hockey, arguably, or maybe statistically. Sometimes you don't see as many penalties.
That's true.
For whatever reason, they don't call the same penalties. But you know what? 5-on-5 hockey, I really like their goaltender in 5-on-5 hockey.
I do. Now, their 5-on-5 play has not been as good this year.
It's not been as good. You're right. They've thrived with the penalties. But
the other thing I like, and granted, there's not as many power plays in the playoffs, but their penalty kill has been fantastic of late.
That's right.
And so when you do get that penalty called in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, you're seeing Cirelli, Hagel, and then Mott, Glendening. Those 2 pairs as your forwards on your penalty kills have been fantastic.
And that's a big, big momentum boost when you can kill those off, you know, especially in the postseason. Now, that's the thing. It's such a long series, and you have to win 4 of them. And, you know, injuries play a factor. Everything does.
No question. I don't think the Lightning are as deep as other teams.
No.
And so, you know, a couple injuries may hurt them more than other teams.
True.
That's true. You just don't know what will happen. But you like the way they're playing. I mean, forget these last few games. You know, against Pittsburgh on Saturday, the first 2 periods were okay. Against Columbus, they played pretty bad the first 2 periods. We're taping this before the Ottawa game, so you'll hear this afterwards. But these last few games don't matter. So and Lightning are working on some things, and they want to kind of be playing the right way, but there's no urgency to their game.
Right.
Like, you know, it doesn't matter if they lose these games. They're pretty much at this point locked into the first wild card. Still an outside chance they could get the 3rd seed, but pretty much they're locked into the first wild card. And so, you know, their job is just to get ready for next weekend when the playoffs start.
Yeah, Cooper said it the other night. You know, they're playing against a team that's not, obviously Columbus had a lot of injuries, young players and all that. He goes, the first thing is when you get to this point, you just don't want to get anybody hurt, you know?
Yep.
But they have to play. And he goes, and you want to make sure that you're not developing bad habits. You're out there playing the right way, you know? Just continue to work on your game, sharpen things up.
Try to get Cooch the scoring title.
And try to get, yeah, at any cost, yes. Try to get Cooch the scoring, which he seems to be able to do by himself pretty readily. But and maybe a hat trick for Stamkos here or there.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's they're kind of they've been down this path so many times before that they know how they have to be playing and when they have to be playing that way. And you know, there's a certain energy that comes now. You know, you're one hit away, right? You're one penalty away, one bad bounce away from things going awry. And that's the beauty of this of this tournament. It's the greatest postseason in all sport. I just, you know, for the battles, for the attrition, for the absolute marathon that it is to try to, you know, to win this thing, to lift that cup. I mean, it's just, it's incredible, you know, to watch. And, but those guys have been there so many times that they know that road, you know, they know it's full of broken glass and it's dark and it's, you know, stormy and, you know, all that stuff. They get it. And mm-hmm. and they embrace that and they know how to navigate it. And not every team does. You know, there's a lot of teams, Steve, I think, that'll be starting this playoffs going, we think we can win a Stanley Cup. There's only a few that said, we know we can win a Stanley Cup because we've done it. Mm-hmm. And the Lightning are one of those teams. You know, they have the belief because they know that road. They know what it takes. Now, can they achieve that? Who's to say? But they absolutely know how to navigate it.
I'm trying to think of the Eastern Conference. Let's just take the Eastern Conference. The last Eastern Conference team that's going to make the playoffs that won a Stanley Cup outside the Lightning.
Florida?
Washington or Pittsburgh, one of those two.
Florida
made it to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, they didn't win it.
Boston made it against St. Louis, but didn't win it.
Right.
Like Washington or Pittsburgh, who one of them will probably make the playoffs, but I don't think anybody thinks they can win the Stanley Cup. They could win the series, sure, but
yeah. Yeah, you're right. I don't think either.
That experience in the East of teams that know they can win a Stanley Cup,
mm-hmm.
it's the Lightning.
Yeah. No, and I don't care which hockey night you're listening to, everybody will say the same thing. Is that, well, you don't want to play these guys in the first round or the second round, or you just don't want to play them. You know, like this is not the team that people want to face. And that's respect,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's understanding who's on the other side of that ice and what they've accomplished. There's a lot of names that are etched in the cup on the Lightning bench. There just is. And they have a Hall of Fame coach on top of it. Don't discount that either.
Who's never won the Coach of the Year.
Who's never won the Coach of the Year, which is just bizarre. But it matters, right? Because mm-hmm. the guy on the bench this time of year is even, you know, because you're playing the same team night after night, and the adjustments now
mm-hmm.
Become more heightened and have to be made more quickly. And I think coaching is even, you know, more of a factor, maybe it is, than during a regular season. I don't know.
All right. John asks, has Steven Stamkos made it even more difficult for the Lightning to let him walk next season? Before March, I was wondering if he slowed down, but right around the time they added Anthony Duclair, he looks reinvigorated. Breezeball has to find a way to keep him, right?
Well, yes, I would agree that I think he's made it more difficult for them to say goodbye to him. And I think one of the reasons maybe that they weren't, you know, so eager to just throw a big number at him is the fact that you wanted to see what he could do in another full season mm-hmm. at his age. And he went out there and proved that he's still one of the more, you know, valuable players on this team and in this league because of his ability to score, of his absolute, you know, sniperness on special teams, mm-hmm. you know, with all the power play goals. He scored over 40 goals this year again, Steve, didn't he?
He does. He could get to 50.
He could get all the way
to 50. Or no, Brayden Point, he'll get to 40. He's at 39.
He's at 39, so he could get to 40.
Yep.
But a 40-goal season at his age mm-hmm. with no contract, right? So he's motivated, yep. but he's always been motivated. I think he has proven. Now, the question is going to be, as it is with any negotiation, all right, you're another year down the road. How much for how long, right?
Well,
that's what it comes down to.
Let me go over the cap situation for the Lightning because this is where I don't think the Lightning have ever wanted Stamkos to walk, even when they didn't talk about a contract before the season. As Julian Breezeball has said, I need to see where Steven's at the end of the year. I need to see where we're at as a team at the end of the year. Salary cap wise, the Lightning are always right at the cap. Usually they're over the LTIR, et cetera. So take out Duclair and Dumba because the only reasons they're here is because Mikhail Sergachev's money went to LTIR. So if you want Duclair or Dumba back next year, and Duclair made $3 million this year, Dumba made $3.9 million. If you want to try to keep those guys at the same number or whatever, like somebody's got to go because there is no money under the cap. unless you don't re-sign Steven Stamkos. Because the Lightning's roster is at the cap. The cap's going to go up about $4 million this year. Well, Brendan Hagel's getting a $5 million raise. That eats that up.
Mm-hmm.
So now your roster's the same. Now, your UFAs are, Declare and Dumba are, but like I said, you're over the cap with them. It's only because Sergachev's injury that allowed you to get them. So your UFAs are Tyler Mott, Austin Watson, Calvin DeHaan, Hayden Fleury. They're all making the minimum. So if you get rid of them, you got to replace them with essentially the same salary. The only salary coming off the books is Stamkos at $8.5 million. So if you want to re-sign a Duclair or a Dumba or try to go get a Noah Hanifin, who apparently has interest in coming here and did at the trade deadline, it just didn't work out. Like, if you want to go get any of those guys, where are you freeing up money? So how much are you willing to pay Steven Stamkos, and how much is he willing to play for? That's right. The question. And does he look reinvigorated with Duclair on his line? That whole line looks fantastic.
It does.
When you finally have top six forwards, it's amazing how much better your lines look.
It changes everything, yeah.
Yeah, that's where they've missed an Alex Killorn this year. You know, he was that top six forward last year.
And that's a salary cap situation.
Yeah, they lost him because Anaheim offered him $6.25 a year for 4 years. I'm not sure what the Lightning offered, but my guess is it was half that. And so he went, you lost that top six forward. Duclair gave it that back now, and now the top two lines look spectacular.
Stamkos, here's the other question for Stamkos. Okay. Could he make more money somewhere else? My guess is he could.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the restrictions that the Lightning you just laid out.
Yep.
Is there an appeal to playing for one organization your entire career? Absolutely. I think talk to Mike Evans, talk to some of the guys that have done it, Derek Brooks, others. Now here's the big one. Is he willing to take less, not because he needs to or anything, but because it will help him win, because it will help the Lightning win in his final couple years? To that, if he understood, like if you went to Steven Stamkos and said, look, we have X, we want you back, here's what we have. Which one of these players do you think we should lose to keep you? What are you willing to do so we can keep this guy and make you better and your team better? I think there's going to be some give and take is what I'm saying. I think that Steven's going to have to leave some money on the table.
No question.
He absolutely could get more money someplace else. Toronto, wherever. I don't know. I don't care where you go. He could get the most money someplace else, in my opinion. But if he wants to finish his career here and have a chance to win again, I think he's going to have to do one of those team-friendly deals. Not that you don't pay him market value or you just try to get the hometown discount and all these things that people like to throw out there. But it's going to be more about...
Well, he took a team-friendly deal last time.
He did. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, 8 years, $8.5 million is nothing to sneeze at, but he could have got a lot more.
But he could have gotten a hell of a lot more.
Or Buffalo. Yeah. Now, the other question of this, and different than football, is the contracts are fully guaranteed.
That's right.
So let's just, for argument's sake, and no clue, but the Lightning say, okay, Steven, you're worth $5 million a year. And we're going to offer it for 2 years. You're 34 now,
You'll be 36. Yeah.
What happens when another team goes, when a Nashville or take a team that's really good, has a chance to compete, win?
One hump, one player away. Get over the hump.
Yeah. We'll offer you the $8.5 million you've been making for 4 years compared to $5 million for two. And that's where it becomes, how important is it to stay in Tampa? How important is the team and everything you have here? I mean, and that's an answer you can't answer. I can't answer. That's a question for Steven Stamkos. And that's going to be, it's not only the amount of money for the year, but the term too.
Right.
Because he signs a 2-year deal here. There's no guarantee he gets another contract after that. But if someone's going to offer you 4 or 5.
Yeah. How do you turn that security
Because they
down?
Need a veteran like him. They need a captain like guy. They need somebody in that locker room like that.
Absolutely.
And in free agency, you overpay. That's how you get free agents.
Yeah. No question.
And that'll be the interesting question at the end of this. And tell me how this season ends.
Well, tell me how it ends. And then the other part of it is there any looming bitter feelings about him being in this position in the first place? In other words, Breezeball was not willing in any way to talk about next year, this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just wasn't. And if Stamkos can't get past that, then there's not going to be a deal right here.
But it's also possible, and we'll never know this, Julian Breezeball may have valued Steven Stamkos at, let's just say, $4 million a year. But the way he's played this year, well, now, you know what? We think he's worth more.
Like maybe he's worth a $6 million a year. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that'll be a determination that, you know, Breezeball and Matthew Darsh and the whole, you know, team at the Lightning and working well, within the constraints of their cap.
Whatever they thought they were getting this year, they mm-hmm. certainly have to be beyond pleased with what they got.
He's been fantastic.
You could not have no one in the Lightning could have asked for a better year, right, than what he gave them at age 30.
I think you were hoping for a year like this, but yeah, I don't know if you were expecting it.
Right.
I mean, you know that shot is lethal. You know, the biggest question with him will always be, and it's with any player once you're getting 34, 35, you know, up in age, is at some point the speed starts deteriorating. You start getting slower. Father Time's undefeated. And so, you know, that's always the biggest. And as the game gets faster, you know, Steven Stamkos will always have that one timer on the power play this year, next year, 5 years from now. Like, you know, he and Alex Ovechkin are by far the best two shooters we've seen in a generation. No question about it.
No question.
You know, but it's now, you know, he keeps in pretty good health. He's had some injuries over the years. Some of them freak, whatever, you know, but it's, you know, how do they evaluate him analytically? How do they think he's, you know, doing, you know, did he take a step back at all this year? I have no idea. You know, every team has their own numbers.
Is the postseason part of this picture? It'd have to be, right?
Sure. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not saying, you know, like you have to win a round or two. But he plays. Yeah.
Right. But if say they were to lose in, you know, the first series and he doesn't do anything particularly remarkable, or the opposite true, they go deep in a postseason because he's on fire. Like all of it's still yet to mm-hmm. be determining, I guess.
I mean, the one thing we know about Julian Breezeball is he has a plan and he pretty much sticks to it. And you're not going to hear about it ahead of time. Anybody that says, you know, we're hearing Stamkos may sign this, the Lightning keep things closer to the vest than anybody. Matter of fact, we recorded a podcast with Anthony Duclair and Matt Dumba for the Lightning on Monday. And they were asking about getting traded to the Lightning. And both of them said, we had no clue the Lightning were even in on us.
Is that right?
Until right beforehand.
Nice surprise, right?
Like, yeah. I mean, you know, they had heard some teams in this, but like the Lightning was like, that was not a name I had heard leading up to the trade deadline.
Yeah, those are usually the teams that get you, right?
Mm-hmm.
The ones that are quiet.
Well, the Lightning tend to go off the board a little bit But they have their plan, even in contract negotiations. You don't hear how things are going until a contract's announced.
Right, right.
You know, we know Julian Breezeball has a plan. He takes it right out of Steve Yzerman's playbook. Same type deal with Detroit and when he was here. Very tight to the vest. Here's our plan, and we don't deviate from it. We have a value for you. If you're not willing to play for that, we'll go elsewhere. That's pretty much how they operate. Because they're looking at not just this year, but next year, the year after. And, you know, their goal is to stay competitive every season.
Mm-hmm. Crystal ball, you have to make the decision. Lot at stake. Is he here next year or not?
I think he is.
Yeah, I do too.
I don't know what number. But
I don't know the particulars. I don't think Steven Stamkos, after the year he's had, is going anyplace. Just don't.
Period. I think the bigger thing is he willing to take a shorter term contract than he might get in free agency? He'll get more money elsewhere for sure.
Yeah.
But he might also get more term elsewhere.
Well, and the other thing is, how long does he want to play?
Mm-hmm.
You know? I guess as
long
as
that is another question. He's earned about $100 million in his career playing.
You're scoring about 40 goals a year. You probably feel like you could play for a while, but
no, he's top 30 in goals. Does he want to keep moving up that list?
Yeah. I mean, if he plays one or two more seasons, is he a Hall of Famer? Maybe
he's a Hall of Famer now. He's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's your goal? You've won the cup a couple times. You're going to go to the Hall of Fame. You've made a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your goal? To try to get another cup?
Absolutely. You want your name on that thing as many times as possible.
Yeah. I mean, that's why you play. You play to win. You play to get another cup. So if he thinks his chances are good here, as in going someplace else, I don't know. What is that desire to go someplace else? Because the grass isn't always greener. As my good friend Tom Moore says, sometimes the grass is greener around the septic tank. So you gotta be careful about that. So we'll see. But great discussion. All right. Speaking of great players and the Tampa Bay Lightning, they're at Washington against Ovechkin.
How Washington's fighting for a playoff spot. So
yeah, they are. Yeah, they are.
That's going to be a desperate team you're facing, much like Pittsburgh was last Saturday.
Ovi, by the way, another 30-goal season.
18 of them.
Incredible. 18, 30 goals. Just incredible, man, what he's been able to accomplish. The Rays will, continue their series against the San Francisco Giants. And,
well, they'll start tonight. They'll start the series.
Well, they'll start tonight. I'm sorry. Yeah, they begin that series. And then we've got a tradition like no other. Across Butler Cabin, past the azaleas, all the way to Amen Corner. Hello, friends. It's the Masters. Tiger Woods is going to not make the weekend. I don't know. Does he? Let me give you this. Does he make the cut? I don't think he's going to win. Does he make the cut, Steve?
Well, in full disclosure, we're taping this before his round on Thursday.
So we don't know what he did.
We don't know what he did on day one. As you're hearing this, you already know day one.
Right.
I don't think he could be home already, for all we know.
Right?
I don't think he makes the cut.
I don't either. I think it's too much. He hadn't played enough golf, and I think that course is just really grueling. But everybody will be rooting for him, that's for sure, because he makes golf interesting. There's no question about that. So, great sports weekend. Enjoy the weekend. We'll be back here to talk to you on Monday. For Steve Burstick, I'm Rick Strada of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.